Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Episode 181 of Below the Belt. Battle Paul Zanon, how are you, mate? The people asked for it.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. It's what day is it? Like Tuesday. So it's exactly a week ago since I saw you in the flesh, as I say, at the Muhammad Ali Rumble in the Jungle rematch in Canada Water. That was a good night, wasn't it?
It was good. It was. It was really good. It was interesting, wasn't it? So for people that don't know, it's down in Canada Water, isn't it? It's down in Canada Water in London. And it's I would call it like an interactive play. Is that fair? Is that a fair kind of description of it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what they've done is they've tried to choreograph as much of the historical event as possible. Everything from the press conferences through to the actual fight itself. Very clever. I mean, you know, you've got like the fight, the actual real fight going on in the background, and they're there doing the moves, and it's very, very good. You know, we would have put hours and hours to make sure that was spot on. But then you've got the likes of Don King walking around, and you know, you say to him, "Can I have a selfie?" And the next thing he's going, "Okay, man, yeah, of course. But do you want to come and see the press conference now? We're going to go. And you're thinking, okay, you kind of, you know, all of a sudden you're immersed into this this particular nostalgia. You know, you're there, 1974, Zaire, and you suddenly end up in this, this press conference, and you've got all of these guys, the security guys from Zaire, you know, from Obuto's crew, who started from the go, everyone including David Frost, and it's just so well done, it really is. And you know, the cups that they had, the plastic cups, I think me and you nicked a couple each, and they're great little mementos, you know. So yeah, great night, and big thanks to Luke Williams for sorting us out for that. But yeah, it was fantastic. Really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it was really good. And yeah, it was something unlike anything I'd ever been to before. And we saw, actually, another thing, I saw Ben Shalom walking by when he walked past a few times. I didn't get a chance to say hello to him, but he was there. I think it may have been a press night or something, because there was a few noticeable people there that night, other than yourself, of course. It was good. It was good. It was really, really interesting. Like you said about the choreography of the boxing, they were doing the stuff as they were doing. They were showing the real fight on the big screen behind them. They obviously had the arena kind of set up for the actual fight itself, and then you had all the entertainment beforehand. And what was amazing about kind of the actors is that they were on for 4 hours, weren't they? Or, you know, 3 and a bit hours. They were on in character the entire time. So that was what was really interesting about it. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Thanks to Luke Williams for sorting us out for that, because it was good fun. It was a good night. It's been a little while since you've been on, Paul. Has there been anything that's in the boxing world that's kind of got your goat or really made you happy or something you've really enjoyed or something that's really annoyed you?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think we everything we're going to discuss, to be honest, that probably ticks all of those boxes. I was away last week in Nepal doing some charity work, and I come back on the Saturday night, and I thought, let's see how long I can stay up, jet lag and all that shit, and I'm actually have no problems at all. And I thought, right, you know, I'm going to watch this this Fury fight. You know, I was adamant I wasn't going to watch, but I was just intrigued. To be honest, I was actually looking forward to the undercards more than anything, and then I was like, well, I've got this fast, so I may as well watch it. And they're going on about this big extravaganza, you know, stay in your seat, watch this, and, you know, the pyrotechnics display and all these people going to be singing and dancing. What a load of pony. Absolute crap. It really was. Honestly, I have seen better intros and ring walks done by sort of six-year-olds at primary school. That was a load of shit. If Saudi are looking at trying to sort of be the premier venue, you know, kick out the likes of Madison Square Garden, everything that's been offered in Las Vegas and all the places around the world, they got a long way to go. I don't give a shit how much they paid everyone to get there. They've got every single WBC world champion that's ever been or still breathing on the planet to go there and that. But the production was total and utter pony. It really was. And yeah, I mean, if I could actually make it, you know, we're reversed, but if I'm going to go straight into the actual sort of main event itself, yeah, that was pretty much equally as pony as well. I mean, you got Tyson Fury, who's saying he's been in 12 weeks of training. Training for what? I'm not sure. Didn't really look in that great a shape. I mean, it's not the weight. The weight for Fury is not the thing. You know, when he fought against Wilder, the second time, he wasn't far off 20 stone, but it was a 20 stone unit. Whereas this time, it looked a little bit flabby. The very first punch he threw was the right hand, and it went straight through the guard of Francis. And I thought to myself, this is going to be over soon. It's going to be like a public execution. But he pulled back, and I thought, well, you know what he's doing, yeah? He's doing it for the crowds, doing it for the audience. He wants to show that, you know, he can extend it a little bit and then sort of dismantle him. Well, he gets caught in that round, and was it third round, with that left hook, and it was just over his right ear, just over the central nervous system, and that scrambled him. When you see him on the floor, you see his eyes wide open, and I think a lot of other fighters wouldn't have got up from that. And he gets up, and he seemed very hesitant from there on. And even though the accidental stroke, definitely not accidental, elbow to Ngannou's face, landed absolutely spot on. We have to remember that Ngannou's been hit with elbows pretty much his whole fighting career. That's what he does in MMA. Did not flinch a muscle. Absolutely nothing. Carried on going forward. And yeah, I mean, listen, it was a close fight in terms of Ngannou is a very basic fighter. He will, you know, he's pretty much walking forward in his MMA style. In other words, a boxer will tend to lead with their shoulder, make a much narrower target, and he was going sort of walking flat, as flat as you could, giving Fury maximum target. And I don't know what happened, whether Fury got a little bit sort of gun shy, whether a bit scrambled from the blow to Francis Ngannou, whether he was already thinking about the rematch and you know, make it look close, and then I'll come back and beat him. But yeah, it was a shit fight. It really was. And Francis, fair play to him, he's gone in there. He didn't go to dance. He generally went to try and knock him out. It's done Fury's stock absolutely no good. It's almost like cancelled out so much of the goodness that he's done in the past. The only way he's really going to come back for this with gusto is first if he blitzes Ngannou in like a round and then takes on the Joshua fight and does something there. But otherwise, yeah, absolute crap. Really was.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's yeah, it was not good. It was not good. And I think I was talking to someone about that fight the other day, actually. And for a long time, he's been, and I said this in the last pod, he's been boxing kind of, you know, people that are quite flat-footed, you know, Dillian White and Derek Chisora and, you know, even Francis Ngannou. So he's not a proper, you know, not a someone that, you know, you wouldn't call him a world-class boxer. And you can't just go from, you know, doing everything in second gear and then taking on Alexander Usyk and ramping it straight back up to fifth gear again. That's not going to happen. And once you let yourself kind of drift like that as an athlete, once you let yourself kind of just drift and tread water and not really be at maximum kind of capacity, while either in camp or in the ring, it's very hard to get back to that level again. And I think most people, if you'd have asked them before that fight, who would you fancy between Fury and Usyk, most people would have picked Fury because of the size and, you know, everything else. I think now, I don't know what the betting odds are, but I think if you were to ask most people now, you'd have Usyk as a pretty heavy favourite, I would suggest, because you can't put in a performance like that against an MMA fighter. Usyk doesn't, you know, Usyk would have destroyed Ngannou. And Ngannou, fair play to me, did great. I was, you know, made a fan of me that night. But, you know, you'd have to make Usyk a very comfortable favourite now, going into them two having their match, which looks like it's going to be February now. Paul, is that a surprise to you that, you know, that they've gone from the December date to February? Oh.
So, I mean, you know, the day before the fight, Fury's doing his usual thing of, you know, everyone's a shit house. Everyone is not worthy of being in a ring with him. Everyone is below him. And if Usyk, you know, if he tries to step away from this contract from the 23rd of December, he's breaching contract. And the first thing he says after the fight is, you know, I'll see you all next year sometime, you know? And that's straight away like, well, it's not happening on the 23rd then, is it? You know? So, from Usyk's perspective, he must have been thinking, well, that's, you know, that's not great. And his people afterwards went online and basically said, well, you're breaching contract now. So obviously what's happening now is they've gone to Usyk, listen, here's, I don't know, $10 million, keep you happy. You know, go and sit, you know, in your little palace for a little while, and we'll knock on the door and we'll make sure we give you a proper payout. And you come back to Saudi and, you know, give you a few million dollars in Rolexes, you know? So, in the meantime, it's just making a mockery of it. What's really annoying is that the best fights that were happening, majority went under the radar. You know, for me, the best boxing that's happened in the last sort of fortnight has been at £130, and hardly anyone knows about that.
Yeah, you're right. That was a really good fight, wasn't it? The Joe Cordina fight. We'll touch on the Saudi undercard in a minute, but that was really interesting. And Joe Cordina, you know, he scored that one punch knockout to win the title. Obviously, he had to vacate because he hurt his hand, and then he's come back. He's won the title back, and then he's put in this performance against Edward Vasquez. It was a good, really good contest, wasn't it, Paul?
Yeah, I thought it was a cracking contest, and I mean, you got to feel for Vasquez a little bit. You know, two judges give it 8-4. It was never that far away. The draw was maybe sort of nearer to it. I think Cordina did enough to win it by a round, and an absolute max too, but certainly a round. It's a very, very close fight. But I think that he did the more eye-catching stuff. Vasquez was probably... He was like a little Rocky Balboa in there. He was quite a suffocating little fighter, very, very on you at every second. If you weren't switched on, something was going to come over. And another issue was that Cordina was doing great body work, but then Vasquez was catching him with left hooks. So body shots don't tend to get looked at favourably by the judges as headshots. But also, Monte Carlo, it's a weird place. And I remember when I went there to cover Martin Murray's fight back in November 2016. So, I mean, those casinos there, most of the people that are in attendance, they are paying a freaking fortune to be there. You know, ringside is thousands of euros. And a lot of people are dressed up to the nines, or, you know, literally wearing, like, you know, sort of black and whites. And that particular casino, I think, doesn't hold more than, like, a couple of thousand people. It's all down to money again. And, you know, it's like Golovkin fought a number of times there and, you know, in front of crowds of about 1,800 people. But if it wasn't for the amount of money that was going there, the likes of Martin Murray would have never made any money in boxing, because fighting in Manchester and St. Helens and London was not giving him anything at all. So, but in terms of a fighter like Cordina, having fought in big arenas before, you know, stadiums and that sort of stuff, and you've got tens of thousands of people screaming your name, and all of a sudden you're there with a lot of people dressed up in a, you know, black tie, sort of, you know, clapping quite mildly and nodding their head and stuff every time a punch has landed. it can be a little bit difficult to try and motivate yourself to maybe shift through those gears. So, but either way, I thought it was a fantastic fight. Really, really entertaining. I mean, it's just non-stop. Both prepared for it immensely. Hats off to the both of them. Yeah, that was great. And, you know, you look at a fight like that that not that many people actually tuned into versus that shit in Saudi Arabia. I'm talking about the headline card, you know, because the actual, I thought the, we'll come on to it, you know, the Wardley fight I thought was very good, actually. But, yeah, and then obviously there was the Oshaki Foster fight as well, and against Eduardo Hernandez. There we go for all the my Latino friends out there. Again, absolute belting fight, and you know, many had to have Hernandez quite a way ahead on the cards. And yeah, you know, Oshaki Foster's a very, very durable fighter. If you're sort of ranking fighters at the moment, he's ranked number two, 130 pounds by many. Number three, we've got Lee Wood, and number four, Joe Cordina. Number one, you've got Navarrete, who a lot of people just want to steer the fuck away from because he is a absolute handful and a nightmare for many. So, but yeah, again, the Oshaki Foster and Hernandez fight, not many people know about. It didn't have the publicity. It was fought in Mexico. Foster had to win in Hernandez's backyard. What a cracking fight. But round 11. People haven't seen it. Go on and watch round 11. That was absolutely sensational.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So, yeah, those two fights were amazing, absolutely brilliant. You know, kind of restored my faith in boxing. And now, you know, in terms of Cordina, I think, you know, we've discussed before that he was saying that he just wants to have one more fight at 130 pounds and then move up to 135. So if he's looking to have one more fight at 135, I highly recommend that he doesn't go and fight Navarrete because I think he could do a number on him. But I think the fight that we all need to see, and I think it could be an absolute belter, it's got to be Lee Wood against Joe Cordina all day long.
Yeah, no, Lee Wood and Joe Cordina. Yeah, that would kind of make sense. Am I right in thinking that Joe Cordina's boxed at lightweight before? Pretty sure he has, isn't he? Did he start there?
Yeah, no, he had boxed at lightweight. He fought Joshua Hernandez at lightweight. That was in Brentwood, albeit Hernandez was like just over into the lightweight limit. But yeah, no, he started off at 130, and then his next 1, 2, 3, 4 fights were at 135, and we fight the likes of, you know, Jamie Spate and people like that. There's, you know, more sort of journeyman. He actually had a fight at 142 pounds against Lee Connolly as well. Wow. And then his first fight at 130 was against Mario Enrique Tinoco, who he fought in Monte Carlo. And then from there on, it was pretty much, apart from the Hernandez fight, it was pretty much all at 130. Mm. So, yeah, I think for his frame and his age, 135 would be a good move. My only fear is that he lacks power even at 130. So how's he going to do at 135?
Yeah, he looked absolutely enormous on Saturday. He looked huge compared to Eduardo Vasquez. It was funny, when I was reading Eduardo Vasquez's name, I found myself saying Edward instead of Edward, even though they're spelled exactly the same. I don't know why I did. Maybe I was just overcompensating. Sometimes we do that. But yeah, I've decided I'm calling him Edward. But yeah, he looked huge, Cordina. He looked massive. He looked at least like a junior welter, if not a welter. So I wouldn't be surprised if he did move up at some point, because I think Eddie Hearn said afterwards, Eddie Hearn, actually, he made some really good points. He said, you know, you don't want to have one fight too many at the weight. I'm paraphrasing. But then he also said, but when you've got a belt, it's difficult to give a belt up. You know, he's a world champion at 130, and you can, you know, look at the landscape of 135 right now. You've got Devin Haney, who's got, you know, all four belts, but he's kind of dipping his toe into 140. And so there's not really a lot of options there for Cordina. He's not a WBO titleist, so he's not automatically going to get a shot. If he was a WBO titleist, though, if he was to move up, he would automatically become the mandatory. That's not the case, because he's the IBF champion. So there's a few things there for Cordina, but, you know, I thought he just about did enough to win the fight. I thought 7-5 would have been fine. There was a lot of kind of uproar about, you know, the 116, 112, but when you think about it, it's one swing round away from a 7-5. So, you know, he's just got one more close round than you'd expect him to. You know, 7-5 I think would have been absolutely fine. So 8-4, yeah, a little wide, definitely a little wide, but, you know, these things happen, I guess. And hopefully Vasquez can get another fight at some point, because he deserved it. You know, a guy that's come into that with three knockouts, so not really a puncher, but he's come into it and, you know, he's given a right good showing. Maybe he gets the Foster fight or something like that. But I was really pleased for Foster, for him to go over to Mexico. One of the judges had him losing every round, Paul. Had him losing every single round. And he's managed to pull it out and get the stoppage. And fair play to the ref, because it was a good stoppage for me. I thought it was a good stoppage from the referee. And, you know, it seemed like everything was stacked against Foster, and he's just managed to pull it out. I was really pleased for him. And hopefully now he can go and get the really, really big fights, or get a unification, you know, at the very least. But yeah, let's talk about the undercard over in Saudi, because I didn't really get to talk about it last time with Flav, because, you know, I think we was both so surprised at what happened in the main event. You know, i.e., you know, whether you look at it as Ngannou's kind of performance or Fury's non-performance, I think we were so taken by that and the ramifications of that we didn't really talk about the undercard. But the I think you're right when you say Fabio Wardley stopped David Adelaide. There was a lot of kind of beef and a lot of stuff went on pre-fight, but my feeling before the fight was that Wardley would stop him, and he looked a level above, didn't he, Paul?
He looked a level above. He looked a weight division above, to be honest. Like Adelaide kind of looked like a bit of a bumped up cruiserweight. You know, he's got power. You know, it's. I think Wardley was kind of prepared for that. And whenever the punches were being thrown, yeah, he kind of got hit, but they were never going to be in danger of knocking him out. He fought a very clever game, kept him at distance, worked his jab very well, opened him up nicely, and without a doubt, he was, you know, it's a bit of a worn out phrase, but there's certainly levels in that fight, and Wardley was well above him. The bit where he knocks him down, and Adelaide's there with his sort of tongue sticking out, which is basically blooded to hell, and he's sort of there, sort of looking at him as if to sort of say, yeah, you know, I'm going to come and get you. Well, that's never going to happen, and the inevitable did happen when it was stopped. Again, you know, I think the referee did the right thing by stopping it. Was it premature? 10 seconds later, I think exactly the same thing would have happened. So I'd like to see Wardley now in something a little bit more engaging, you know. His fellow undercardee, in terms of Joe Parker, fought an absolute bum of the month. I don't give a shit what his record said. This guy from Canada who had, like, what, 23, 24 fights and, like, 22 knockouts. All of the fights in Canada, all of them against bums. He'd actually lost one of those fights and then came back and knocked the bloke out. But it was absolute trash. Now, putting in someone like Fabio Wardley against an ex-world champion, that'd be a good, you know, that'd be a good one. And but I don't think we need to go overseas in terms of the fighters there. We've got the likes of Daniel Dubois, we've got Joe Joyce. Is he ready for them? I know it's a step up, but, you know, 16 knockouts and 17 fights, I think there'd be a lot of fear from the other guys in the British heavyweight division. So he's, you know, he's totally proven himself with the likes of Nathan Gorman, and now, you know, Adelaide was just a grudge match. I don't think I think he took that match and just to sort of shut him up, not to show that he was wanted to get up a rankings or anything. That was a personal bit of beef there. So yeah, Wardley, very good fight, a very good performance, kept his head, and I hope he gets a much bigger fight next. It's it's annoying when you see the likes of Bacoli coming in, weighing 20 odd stone. Excuse me. I was coughing because I had a wasp in my mouth there. And then the next thing, yeah, you know, he wins the fight. Apparently, he gets stung by a wasp and he beats, you know, Takam, who was almost as old as Luis Ortiz in there. You know, he's in his 40s and he was just getting battered. He got no lateral movements, just a punch bag. And back in the day, Takam was hard as hell. I remember seeing him when he fought against Chisora and they had a right old shootout there. But seeing him in there was pitiful. It was horrible. And I was ringside when Bacoli got beaten like a dog against Michael Hunter. And Hunter's been, you know, Bacoli's there going, I'll fight anyone who's up. And you see Hunter sort of going, you know, on Twitter, hello, hi, you know, doing the little wave, but that nothing. He goes completely silent. Michael Hunter's a very, very difficult fighter. Some people say blown up cruiserweight, whatever. He's done very well at heavyweight. And as a cruiser, he's one of the few that actually lasted the distance with Alexander Usyk. So very, very good fight and very tough. Great movement, handful to anyone. And because of that, nobody wants to fight him. You know, it's, when's the last time Michael Hunter's fought? So, but in the meantime, Bacoli goes on in front of this shit show in Saudi Arabia and basically ends up by walking over a very, very vintage Carlos Takam. So, yeah, again, crap. As with Joseph Parker, total and utter shite. What's that done for their records? Put another win on there. Big deal. Total crap.
And the thing with those is, Paul, if you're going to put, you know, Bacoli and, you know, Joseph Parker and Fabio Wardley and all of them basically on that card, the plan really should be to match them together afterwards. Really, they should be looking to make, you know, Bacoli against Parker or Wardley against Parker or Parker, you know, Bacoli against Wardley, you know. But will they get made? Who knows? I don't think so. I was just, you said, when did Michael Hunter last fought? And I couldn't tell you. I was just going to quickly look it up while you were talking. Because he's the last time I remember him, you know, obviously beat Bacoli. Did he draw with Povetkin? I think he drew with Povetkin on a Joshua undercard. I think it was Joshua Ruiz 2. And I couldn't tell you the last time he boxed, but, you know, a really good fighter who's painfully avoided. When you're avoided by the guy that says he's avoided, you know you're really avoided. Like, he's, no one wants any part of him, really. Any idea when he last boxed?
Yeah, so he last boxed in September of last year against Miguel Cubos in I'm not even going to try and pronounce it. It was in Mexico. Wow. And before then, he had a draw against Jerry Forrest. Never heard of him. That was in New York. Mm. He beat Mike Wilson, Sean Flaherty. Again, they were both in America.
Wow.
And then he had the the draw against Povetkin in Riyadh back in December of 2019.
Wow.
He's just a very, very avoided fighter. He's before all of that, his only loss, in fact, is against Usyk. So he's 35, but he's still very fresh, you know. So I feel sorry for him. I really do. I think you know, he's one of those fighters that he just hasn't been given opportunity. But I was just reading today or heard today that Richard Reaktor is going to be making a reappearance. Ooh. So that's good because I would still like to see him in, you know, the fight that everyone back in the day wanted to see was him against Lawrence Okoye. That could still be a good fight, but him to fight against Chris William Smith, who's obviously done incredibly well since they fought. Mm. That's the only loss that William Smith has on his CV. So I think that would be a great rematch. And Richard Riaport is, you know, a tough fighter, 6'5", comes out firing. He's got great tools to him, great lateral movement. So yeah, that again, that could bring us back to real boxing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's, you know, Boxer have kind of got a little lock on the cruiserweight division, other than Jai Opetayo, who's with Matchroom. But, you know, there's good fighters over there on Boxer. And so, you know, it's hopefully they can make, you know, Riaktor, Billum Smith is an absolute no-brainer because Billum Smith's definitely improved since they first fought. And I think it was a split decision. I incorrectly said it was a TKO loss for Billum Smith a few pods ago, but I think it was a close decision loss for Billum Smith. And if they can make a rematch there, That makes it's an absolute no-brainer. You know, let Billy Smith get his first defence out of the way in Bournemouth. You know, let React Poor have a fight, and then let's get it done. Let's get it done. And it's the same with these heavyweights that we were just talking about. I didn't realize until after the fight last Saturday that Fabio Wardy is actually a promotional free agent. He was with Matchroom for a long time. And I thought that he just landed on that card because it was a purse bid. It's not the case. He is actually a promotional free agent. So he could land, you know, maybe he could stay with Queensbury and get some more fights. You know, maybe he gets the Joseph Parker fight, or he gets the Bacoli fight. I don't know why he'd box Bacoli, to be honest. Do you know what? We're just talking about how Michael Hunter's avoided, and in the next breath I've said, why would he fight Bacoli? Because he can't sell it. No one really knows who he is, Paul. No one knows who Bacoli is. He doesn't sell a ticket, and he's already lost to Hunter. So if Wardley beats him, I'm not sure what it means. What was interesting, actually, was that Bacoli hurt Takam to the body. And I remember saying to Sean Brown a few weeks ago, you never see a heavyweight hurt to the body. It's very rare you see that. I don't know if you can think of a heavyweight that was hurt or stopped to the body, but it's very rare that you see it happen, that a heavyweight... I couldn't think the last time I've seen a heavyweight stopped to the body, perhaps hurt. So that was really interesting that Bacoli was able to do that, even though he like you said, he was 300 pounds, really out of shape. I think he took the fight at quite short notice. But he did well to get the stoppage, but it's time for him now to move along. And for these guys that are sitting below that kind of world level of Usyk, Fury, Joshua, to kind of fight each other, to see who's next, to see who can be next, because heavyweight right now is not much going on. And so I think, you know, in order to create some excitement, what we need to see is these guys below the surface, all fighting each other, giving us great matchups, making good money, and seeing who's next. Any thoughts on that, Paul?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I mean, at the moment, in terms of the heavyweight division, yeah, you've got Joshua, who's, you know, he's there doing like shows with Louis Theroux at the moment, and but he's showing his integrity. You know, he's we're not hearing stories of Joshua out with 18 women. You know, he's snorting a load of cocaine and he's absolutely shit faced. It's not him. You know, Joshua gets a lot of shit simply due to the fact that he hasn't fought the whole world. You know, he could have fought King Kong and they'd be like, okay, you did fight King Kong, but I mean, seriously, you know, when you're going to take on Tyrannosaurus Rex, you know, it doesn't matter what it was. There's always been that thing. But then when he lost against Usyk twice and then he had to fight against the American, which was a little bit lackluster, everyone's sort of saying now, what has he got left? Well, you know, if he gets into the fight with, say, Deontay Wilder, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, right, now we've got something. Eddie Hearn is desperate to get the Anthony Joshua Tyson Fury fight, but Fury's not mentioning anything about that. It's interesting because Fury's always been like, well, you know, I couldn't give a shit about the money. It's been all about the money for him. Absolutely, 100%. I mean, the Deontay Wilder fights, yeah, that's probably the last time we've seen him not talking about the money, but all these fights he's been having recently, I mean, it's just absolute nonsense. It really is. You know, you want to go down as a legend, heavyweight legend. Yeah, you've certainly made your mark and you'll be a Hall of Famer at some point, but your resume is quite limited, you know? So I'd like to see Joshua fight. I'd like to see him fight soon. He's knocking on to his mid-30s, as they all are at the moment. We've got the next cohort of big heavyweights that are coming through. America's starting to show promise. You know, certainly the UK, we've got a few people which are starting to develop nicely. You know, you've got Delicious Ori, DJ, as he likes to be known. It'll be interesting to see what happens with him once he's finished as an amateur. You know, hopefully he wins the gold in the Olympics. But, I think we've got various sort of sugar divisions at the moment within the UK. The 130-pound division, I think, is currently flying. I think we've got great fights at 135 as well, but it's that whole thing of, like, you know, Jack Catterall, is he going to get the rematch against Josh Taylor? God knows what Taylor's doing. And ever since he lost against Teofimo Lopez, so now Lopez has started to make some noise saying he'll take on Catterall and he'll sort him out to show that he's, you know, he's nothing as well. Jack Catterall gives everyone a very nasty night, whoever he fights. I'm telling you now, I remember Jamie Moore telling me ages ago, he said he is a very, very difficult fighter. He said he's very awkward, and he says he works in very strange angles, you know. And so, yeah, there's a lot of intrigue out there. In terms of the heavyweight division, having what's, you know, having supposedly the best heavyweight in the world from British shores going out and fighting Ngannou on this shit show in Saudi, that doesn't do anything for boxing, doesn't do anything for British boxing, doesn't do anything for heavyweight boxing. It really doesn't. It kind of puts the whole division into a bit of disrepute as well, you know?
Does it, you said about kind of the production values in Saudi and, you know, kind of how it looked, the concerts and, you know, all of that sort of thing. You said you didn't really want to watch the show because of Fury, you know, because of the main event itself. How do you feel watching, you know, cards like that in Saudi? Is the, you know, kind of what Saudi are doing with the sports washing? Is that a factor for you, or is it very much about the fights and if it's entertaining or not?
Well, I mean, between boxing and the football at the moment, where they've basically been buying people in. And that's not something I really like, to be honest. You're accelerating the model of business or of anything, really, just with cash. I mean, it was a who's who of boxing, you know. Fury walks past every single champion there. You've got everything from Joe Calzaghe through to Lennox Lewis, and, you know, you've got Ronaldo ringside, who's given Ngannou a 100 grand watch before the fight. You've got Eminem sitting there ringside as well. All these people, how much are they being offered to go there? Seriously, we are talking stupid cash. I would love to know how much each one of these famous faces had. And it's that whole thing of sort of saying, you know, saying to people, come along to the fight. You know, we've got all these people coming along. You've got to come along. You should come along. Yeah, very nice. You know, it's been happening a little while, but then it's like, for example, an Amir Khan fought. Remember that time when he fought, was it against Billy Dib, I think it was, and they had like a rapper in between each round. It's just absolute shit. It really is. See, Monte Carlo, I mentioned before, a bit strange where you've only got a couple of thousand people in attendance. But Monte Carlo has a phenomenal heritage of putting on boxing shows. Everything years back, I mean, everything from Marvin Hagler fighting there. And the way you got to look at it is 2,000 people in attendance ain't no difference to York Hall. And, you know, you can get a serious atmosphere in there. I loved going to Monte Carlo, small country, very safe. And, yeah, the fights are very different in terms of the audience that you've got there. And you're not in East London, obviously. But in terms of Saudi, it's not easy to get to. As in, like, from here, I'm talking from the UK. And you've got to get visas. It basically makes it an elite venue to go to. If you're going to cover it for somebody... Well, flipping heck, I think you've got to be part of the very big tabloids and the very big broadsheets to be able to go there, or, you know, or you're working for Matchroom or one of the big promoters, because no one's going to pay you. And you know, my old days of Boxing Monthly, I wasn't going to get paid. You know, doing it as a hobby, it was a no-no, absolutely no go. So I'm just not convinced with the whole thing with Saudi. The sad part is it's probably going to continue to grow there. I just thought it was a shit. Production. I thought the fights were crap. I thought this whole extravaganza was complete shit as well. You know, I'm going to see a boxing match. I'm not there to, you know, to see a pyrotechnic show and see like the people singing and rapping that I've never fucking heard of before. You know, so I'm there to see the fights, and if there's a bit of Sweet Caroline in between, then so be it. But otherwise, no, I thought it was shit.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. You know, Eminem's not going out there for a, you know, for a nice hotel room and a bit of comp kind of tickets and food. You know, he doesn't need the money that much. So, you know, I don't think he's short of a few quid. So I don't think he's going out there to, you know, just for a free hotel room. He's been paid a fair few quid to go out there. And it's, you know, Vince McMahon was out there as well, but WWE, the whole WWE were out there. So that would make sense why he was out there, The Undertaker. And then, yeah, all these Hall of Famers, all these champions, Sugar Ray Leonard was out there. Larry Holmes was out there. Everybody, Manny Pacquiao.
Riddick Bowe, Evander Holyfield, you name it, they were all there.
Every week, Floyd wasn't. Floyd's got too much moral compass for that sort of thing. But
you're on Floyd.
He wasn't there. I think they tried to get him, but he I don't know, he went to the basketball instead. he went to Miami and watched the basketball. Yeah, Yeah, I just think, and you know, I don't blame the old timers. You know, maybe they're getting paid a few quid if they're getting 50 grand or whatever. I don't blame them. But yeah, it does leave a bad taste. But what it shows is sports washing works. You know, it works. It's working. They've got the Formula One, WWE are out there, boxing are out there. And the more they do it, the less people will talk about the regime. They'll just talk about, you know, the events. The silly concerts. Yeah, I kind of checked out of that. I put Match of the Day on when they had the concert on. I just muted the TV, muted the laptop and put Match of the Day on.
What a load of absolute pony. I mean, if I sort of, you know, do a comparison here of fight for fight, 1971, Muhammad Ali fights against Joe Frazier, what's called the fight of the century. Everyone wanted to be there. Frank Sinatra was so desperate to see the fight, he couldn't get himself a ticket ringside. That's Frank freaking Sinatra. So he ended up by getting a photography pass at Esquire magazine and became an official photographer for the evening. That's at Madison Square Garden, you know, a mecca of boxing, without a doubt. And, you know, if we take, for example, the likes of Chantel Cameron, Katie Taylor, you know, Katie Taylor obviously fought at Madison Square Garden and with Serrano, which was an amazing fight. The fight that Cameron and Taylor had in Ireland was a cracker as well. And now, again, you know, Chantel Cameron, she started to make some noise to say, you know, Chris Cyborg, if you want to fight me, bring it on. And, you know, undisputed against undisputed in our own different disciplines. And that's got a bit of intrigue to it in terms of the fact that Chantel was a former multi-time world kickboxing champion. But again, you know, Chantel came from fuck all and was fighting for absolute dog shit purses. And if she can get a big fight against someone like Chris Cyborg and it makes her a seven-figure sum, then fantastic. I cannot... You know, I can't say no on that count because it's not like Fury saying, you know, he's getting paid about 30 or 100 mil to fight in Ghana, whatever it was. That was stupid, stupid money. But Katie Taylor, you know, she only started earning sort of big cash in recent years. And, you know, she's taken a hell of a lot of punches. It just annoys me to see that people have put in all the graft over the years and will retire broken, a bit punch drunk, to say the least, and not getting a chance to have a bit of Saudi. Everyone wants a bit of Saudi now. Everyone's making a comeback. Everyone wants to be a trainer out there. So, yeah, it's just like Jordan Henderson, you know, after the World Cup in Qatar. No, I'm not going to go out to... I'm not going to be going out to the Middle East. You know, I've got my morals and blah, blah. All of a sudden, hello, I'm off to Saudi. Yeah, well, we know what it's about. You've been paid mega cash, mate.
Yeah. They call it life-changing money, but, you know, Jordan Henderson was never going to starve. Let's have it right. His kids were never going to starve. The geezer was on very, very good money at Liverpool, and, you know, he'd have made plenty of money in English football wherever he landed, or European football. He sold out. That's the definition of selling out. He sold his morals out. He sold his principles out. And that's fine, but just say it. Just say it. Don't pretend it's one thing when it's really another. You know, we're not stupid. I do find it difficult sometimes watching the Saudi shows based on what, you know, what goes on over there. But I suppose every country in the world has its issues. You know, we watch fights in America. America has a myriad of issues over there. But yeah, the fact that kind of large portions of society are kind of, you know, not free to kind of exist when you're talking about gay people and women as well. Not so much existing with women, but, you know, there's a lot of limitations on them. It's difficult sometimes to separate kind of the sport from, you know, from real life. Craig Scott, our friend, he's been on the pod quite a few times. He wrote his latest blog, Contaminated Food for Four. And I don't know if you read it, Paul. It came out last week, and he basically saying, "I don't know if I can do this anymore." Was the kind of how he was, the way he was talking about boxing, about how he was so invested before, and now it's just he's just picking and choosing, watching big fights. Sorry, Craig, if I'm completely butchering this. Can you relate to that?
100%. 100,000%. I was actually at a boxing writers club meeting yesterday, and now one of the things we sort of just discussed without sort of actually sort of, you know, disclosing the agenda too much, but it was about how a lot of people don't know a lot of the fighters these days, or haven't seen a lot of the fighters live, because from say pre-COVID, you know, everything was Frank Warren Matchroom. That was pretty much the one back in, you know, I'll turn the clock back sort of six years ago. You know, boxer was pretty much doing what prize fighter was. It was just a small shows, the three round blitz outs, and that's it. You know, fair play, hats off to Ben Shalom. He's done very, very well in terms of how he's gone on since then. But there are so many promotional companies now, and boxing, fighting, they're almost exhibition fights, aren't they? You know, these the likes of a Fury fighting against Jake Paul, the other Fury, you know, Tommy Fury, yeah, and all that shit. It's just not boxing. And when I used to cover, this is the thing as well, I think there's almost like a pre-COVID boxing and a post-COVID, because pre-COVID, I was writing for Boxing Monthly magazine, I was writing for Hannibal Boxing, I was writing for a few people, and I was even doing some stuff for Ring magazine as well. And then COVID happens, Boxing Monthly went belly up, and that's who I used to write for predominantly the most, you know, when I was doing stuff ringside, like yourself, you know, we go along with reports for Boxing Monthly, and I actually loved that. Absolutely loved it. Went and covered all the World Boxing Super Series, which I couldn't get enough of. You know, York Hall, O2, you name it. I'd even forfeit my beloved Queen's Park Rangers on Saturdays to go along and cover these shows. And I haven't covered a show now in years, because firstly, Boxing Monthly went belly up, so who am I going to write for? Well, I don't really fancy sort of, you know, sort of scrambling around for the crumbs, or going there with a video camera and, you know, being another video reporter. No, that doesn't attract me at all. No, I write shit. That's what I do. I don't suddenly just get a video camera from my phone and suddenly say, right, I'm going to be the next IFL. No, not at all. IFL do a great job with that. There's loads of other people who do great jobs with video cameras and video reporting, which is obviously going to be the way forward. But in terms of the actual content of what I'm writing about, if I'd have been ringside in Saudi covering the you know, the Francis Ngannou fight against Tyson Fury with all that sort of shit and all the undercards, would that have excited me? Not really, no. One of the last fights I remember sort of seeing ringside, I was there with James Lupton at the York Hall, and Martin Murray had one of his lads on, and that was brilliant, and all the undercards were brilliant, and it was really gritty, and, you know, people were screaming away. It was back to the old days. I felt like I'd be transported 3 or 4 years back in time, you know. So it almost seems like we need to be going to places like Mexico to see those gritty fights. You know, it puts someone like Canelo in a ring with one of these MMA guys. I don't think Canelo's got the ability to dance around and carry someone for 8-9 rounds and then sort of gently take them out. I think he'll go in and knock them the fuck out. You know, have you seen anyone approaching Derek Chisora to go and you know, fight an MMA fight? Nah, because he ain't got no, you know, sort of ability to dance around. And, you know, this is the man who throws tables across rooms, you know, at press conferences. So they handpick people they think would be good to fight against, you know, these people. I mean, again, the obvious question which everyone states as well, MMA versus boxing. Surely, if you want to make it an even fight, then you've got to sort of say, why don't we do one round boxing, one round MMA until someone gets stopped? And or you do one fight boxing and then you do the return in MMA. I was chatting with Ken Shamrock a couple of weeks ago, who, for the records, at 58 years old, he's still got veins popping out of his arms like copper pipes. And I asked him, I said, listen, you know, peak Ken Shamrock versus peak Tyson Fury, who would have won? And he said, well, in a boxing ring. He said, yeah, without a doubt. He said, I'm sure he would have done his thing, and he'd have probably stopped me. He says, but he says, in an octagon, he said, he'd have been mine. He says, in under a round, without a doubt. And I strongly believe that. So this whole thing of boxers fighting MMA guys, the only one that I think seems to have done it was Clarissa Shields, in terms of going the other way around. And she wasn't really paid much, and it wasn't much of a fight to look at. Savannah Marshall apparently is going to MMA now as well, is it? Well, has she had a fight? I don't know. She's another one. You know, she had, I don't know how much she made with the Clarissa Shields fight, but I think she's been paid dog shit for wages pretty much her whole career as well, and which is very sad. And if people are having to go to MMA just for the checks and then end up by getting a severe elbow to the head and get beaten up, then yeah, the sport of boxing has become unbelievably diluted. It really has. The likes of the classic boxing matchups seem to just be falling by the side. And it's one thing I do say about Tyson Fury. I'm pretty sure that he would have been offered many MMA contests, and he still stayed loyal to boxing, as has Usyk as well. So, I don't want to speak too early on that front, but yeah, how long is it before this sport of ours just becomes an entire joke, you know?
Yeah, it's a little concerning. I think Shields and Marshall are both signed with PFL, and I think the idea is to match them in an MMA fight at some point. But I think Marshall is injured, isn't she? She's just vacated the WBC super middleweight title. That's going to be contested at some point because she's got an injury, and I think she might end up losing another belt at some point as well because she's got this injury and it's quite long term. But yeah, and then if she's talking about going into MMA, obviously Shields has had two fights, I think. She lost one. Yeah, then two are going to do an MMA fight. What does that say about boxing? And if it ends up being shit, which I imagine it will, that's not good for boxing as well. I'm actually a little worried about boxing, to be honest. I feel like we're going to have a 2000s type slump where not much is happening. I don't see many new stars coming along. Flav actually put it very well on the last pod when he said, you've got, out of the big three, you've got the best promoter on the worst platform and the worst promoter on the best platform, i.e. Eddie Hearn's on DAZN, which is the worst platform, and you've got Ben Shalom on Sky, which is the best platform. And what MMA have got is a near monopoly. UFC is the brand. It's the main league where people want to be. Yes, you've got Strikeforce. Yes, you've got Bellator. But UFC is there, and that everybody knows what UFC is, and boxing has just become even more splintered than it was before with the multiple belts and the multiple promoters. But domestically, at least, you know, it's become incredibly splintered, and I just can't see, there's not really any real names coming up right now. And then you had Conor Benn coming through, and then he fails a drugs test and acted like a complete bell end throughout that process, as well as Matrim acting with completely no class and no faith throughout that as well. It's just really worrying me. I'm really, really concerned about it. And then Fury and Ngannou, for that fight to happen, and Fury, our heavyweight champion, to look like shit and to get beat by a guy that, you know, yeah, he has some experience. Or nearly get beat by a guy that, you know, has some experience but shouldn't have lasted more than two rounds with Fury. It's a concern to me. I am a little worried they're about to have a lull. I think influencer boxing has a role in that, but these guys know how to promote themselves. They're promoting themselves. I think promoters a lot of the time are promoting themselves instead of promoting their fighters. It does worry me. But I think it'll pick back up again. I think influencer boxing is peaked. I don't think it's going to get to much. I'm not completely convinced it's on the up and up. It feels more like entertainment. It feels more like a WWE type sports entertainment. I'm not convinced really that it's completely on the up and up, but how would I, who would know? But, to see someone.
I think the sanctioning bodies have got a hell of a lot to do with this. I mean, you know, WBC, which used to be, you know, sort of the title which everyone was going, the green belt, it's just become a load of bollocks now, as with the WBA, and they all are, to be honest. What annoyed me about the Fury fight was that you've got, you know, you almost need to sort of compare it to the amateur game. The amateur game, you need to work your way through divisionals to be able to fight for nationals, then represent your country and, you know, proudly wear your vest and that sort of thing. And then, you know, if you're lucky, you do your trials and you go through to the Olympics, you train with, you'll go up to a special centre, depending on which country you are, you go up to a special centre and you train together with the team, and that's it. And you've got Francis Ngannou, who's leapfrogged the entire system and suddenly fighting the heavyweight champion of the world. Yes, you know, Muhammad Ali fought, the guy in Japan years back, and it has happened. But what I'm saying is, can we not make such a mockery of the system? You've got fighters who have gone through all the gears. You've got someone like Joe Cordina, who, you know, he's worked his way through the gears, become world champion. Then he gets a title taken away from him and due to injury. And you've got someone like Tyson Fury, who hasn't defended his world title in God knows how long. And in the old days, WBC said if he didn't defend it in a year, then you lose it. But Joe Cordina loses it, has to come back. You know, he loses the only bargaining chip that makes him money, then has to come back and win it again, which is, you know, a hell of a task, no guarantee in it. In the meantime, we've got Tyson Fury, hasn't defended his world title, and he's in there jumping around. You know, it's just like, it just doesn't sit well with me. I've started to lose a bit of faith in the boxing. People even said to me, you know, it's like it's been 5 years since you've written a boxing book. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I must admit, I'm not enthused. I want to write a boxing book. I love writing for British vintage boxing because I'm writing about vintage fighters. I get the opportunity to research those greats, research those fantastic fights from years gone. And that keeps me enthusiastic about the sport, without a doubt. What's currently happening, the here and now, no, it really isn't. You know, like I said, for me, those two fights at £130 were brilliant and very, very annoying. Really pissed me off the fact they did not get nowhere near the coverage they should have.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. You know, I think there's, a few things have happened. I think Matchroom going to DAZN, they've done the best thing for them and their business. And I completely understand that. But I think for British boxing, it's been really damaging for British boxing, for our main promotional platform. At that time, not so much now, I'd say more Queensbury now, but at that time, for the main promoter, you know, in Eddie Hearn and Matchroom, to go leave the biggest platform in Sky and go to DAZN, I think is really damaging for boxing. There's some whispers out there about Sky and them looking at their boxing output. It's worrying. And then obviously over in the States, you've got PBC. They're leaving Showtime. There's some rumors about the go of Amazon, but they've gone really quiet. It's a concern, you know. But boxing has had these kind of troughs before. I'm sure it will have more peaks. There's plenty to look forward to. There's still plenty of really good fighters out there. We just need these guys to be promoted better. And the other thing, Paul, is these bloody promoters and these bloody broadcasters have to start working together, because MMA and influencer boxing is a real threat. So treat both of them like a real threat. Start working together and start making the biggest fights. Put on big tournaments. You know, the World Boxing Super Series is great, but let's take it to the next level. That's, you know, the first two or three were perhaps, you know, not stars. There was no stars in them fights. We've got stars out of them. You know, let's take it to the next level now. Let's do a boxing super series, you know, with Usyk Joshua Fury, you know, or the light heavies of Bivol and Beterbiev, or, you know, Spence and Crawford and everybody. You know, let's take this to the next level now. No more tiptoeing. Is that fair?
I agree. I mean, listen, you know, if Saudi can just embrace the fact that inviting famous people to a boxing show is not the reason going to be there. Famous people should want to attend a fight because of how big the fight actually is. You know, Arturo Gatti against Ward, everyone wanted, was jumping over themselves to want to be there. Every celebrity was, everyone wanted to be there. The promotion with Ngannou that was there, it was, he'd invited the audience to a better extent before the fight even sort of like, you know, sort of started. And the actual promotion was crap. But yeah, if he was able to pull off, say for example, the equivalent of a World Boxing Super Series for £135 and one for heavyweight, then I might start to change my opinion. I mean, watch it. Guarantee you, there'll be a Saudi promotional boxing company that will come up very soon, and it'll probably take over because of the financial muscle they have in there. But come on, guys, put on some actual boxing. None of this shit that will happen recently.
Yeah, hear, hear. All right, mate, I'm going to leave you to your evening. I very much appreciate your time. Hopefully I will talk to you soon.
No, that sounds good. And everyone, give the podcast a follow. Below the bell. Absolutely fantastic.
Nice one, mate. Take care.
Sports Social Podcast Network.